Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. Everything you need to know. It's Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we've got the best safety in the league, the Bears sing to anything, and some crazy news going on with the Blackhawks. Well, first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. This season is well underway, and we are, if you live in Chicago and are listening, you know we are in winter weather, which is hockey weather, so you'll want to make sure that you are going to see some of the best minor league hockey around at beautiful Bima Harris Bank Center in downtown Rockford, Illinois, less than 90 minutes from the city limits and fun for the whole family. Head on over to icehogs.com, get some tickets, hat, shirt, jersey, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Oh, Alex, how was your Thanksgiving holiday?
Well, let's just say there's a certain team that made it significantly better.
I will give you that. I will give you that. I was in Pennsylvania. I was in Eagles country for the holiday, and I was proudly wearing my Bears gear. If you are familiar with the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware region, I was proudly wearing it to Wawa and getting a lot of dirty looks. So go me. I was sitting there watching that game going, oh, they've got to win this one. They've got to win this one so I can enjoy Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, really. You know, I think that we can all agree that while going into this game, we said that there was a little pressure off considering they won the first game against the Lions at home and then against the Vikings. But I'll tell you, I think this win is going to end up being pretty huge.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely huge. This win, I mean, granted, the Lions are not a good team. They have won some good games and they have a lot of talent. They are not a good team. But this was a nationally televised game on 85 hours of rest. Yes, 85 hours of rest. And it was on the road against a slightly more rested team that didn't have to travel. So, and you were out without Mitch Trubisky, which was a shocker to most of us.
Well, that's the other thing, too. They didn't even have their starting quarterback in there. And I think you could obviously tell that in moments of the game, the defense was tired from that Sunday night game, which you can't really be upset about because I could only imagine what playing in Detroit is like after a fierce game with the Vikings, especially when it's, you know, a division game. But look, the fact that they were able to squeak out a win there in a place that's really not seen much success at all for the Bears the past, what, 8-9 years? I mean, that feels good, and that's got to feel really good for this team.
Oh, it has to feel good. It absolutely has to feel good. I mean, when was the last time the Bears won three consecutive NFC North games?
I would have to go back and look, but what's weird to think about is under John Fox, they had three total NFC North wins. That's 3 years. They had three NFC North wins in 12 days.
It really makes you understand what a better situation we're in with Matt Nagy than we were with John Fox.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, when was the last time they won three games a season against the NFC North? 2012, maybe? 2010? It's been a while.
It's been a while. It's been a long while. But we did it. And you're right. I think this was a huge game because in the same NFL week, you had the Packers playing the Minnesota Vikings, and whoever lost that game got dropped right down to third place and makes it real tough for them to continue on. Green Bay has a fairly cakewalk schedule for the rest of the season, so I think it was kind of important that the Vikings won this one to just knock them out. And essentially it does, because I think what's the best that the Packers can do? 9 wins?
Right. If they win out, they get 9 wins, and they pretty much have to rely on a lot of other teams not to get 10 wins. And I think you could look at a number of teams right now in the NFC that can get at least 9 wins and probably 10. You're looking at the Vikings that I think will get 9-10 wins. You're looking at, I think, the Seahawks. They're going on a great run right now. And there's a bunch of other teams out there too that, you know, are going to be right in the thick of things. So basically, the Packers would have to leapfrog a bunch of teams. And even if they get 9 wins, I don't know if that's going to get them in.
Oh, I don't expect that to. Let me pull up the current NFL standings. And in the NFC, the Redskins were in real good shape until Alex Smith got hurt.
Right.
That sort of drops them completely out of the picture, because I don't think they can. It's not. I think you can. With a backup quarterback, I think you can do something if you have a really fantastic running game and or a fantastic defense. And I think they were just an okay offense, okay defense, and okay at running. So without having good quarterback play, it seems like they're kind of out of it, even though they are 6-5. But Cowboys, well, you're going to have somebody from that division win. I think it's almost mathematically impossible for the Packers to win the NFC North. So you'll have to count somebody else as the champion.
Especially if the Bears beat the Packers in a few weeks, then their 3% chance of making the playoffs is zero.
Yeah, it's down to zero. And the Bears just need one more win. And that includes the 49ers and the Giants, and they'll have 9 wins. So, it's real tough for the Packers to win the division. So I'm going to say they won't win the division. So they'll be the winner of the East, the winner of the North, the winner of the West, and the winner of the South. That's 4 teams. So you have 2 wild cards. The Eagles have a better record than the Packers, and I think they're a better team. They didn't look very good in their win against the Giants in the first half, and they looked terrible against the Saints.
It looks pretty bad this year.
Yeah, but they're the defending Super Bowl champions, and once they get healthy, I think they've got a better shot of making the playoffs than the Packers. The Seahawks are playing great. The Vikings have already played both games against the Packers, so it's not like they can play catch up. They won one, tied one. The Vikings or the Bears, whoever doesn't win the division, which I think it's going to be the Vikings, they're going to be one of the teams ahead. Right there with the Packers, you've got the Falcons and the Bucks, and then the Panthers are ahead of both of them, even though they're on a rough patch here. It's going to take a lot for the Packers to win, and they still got to beat the Lions.
Yeah, and I mean, we're looking at this scenario assuming the Packers would win out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've got the Arizona Cardinals to beat, which they should.
Yeah.
They've got, actually, I think it's on, and then they've got the Giants, but the Giants are playing better.
Which is why this next coming game for the Bears to me doesn't feel as automatic as a lot of people are pointing it out to be, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit, but I just kind of wanted to say that.
Here's the thing. If you stop Saquon Barkley, you stop the Giants offense.
Yes.
And the Bears are one of, if not, you know, this Detroit game aside, which we'll talk a little bit more about, they've pretty much shut down the run from everybody.
Oh, absolutely. It's been great. I just, you know, Saquon Barkley's on a whole other level, but you're absolutely right that you got to just shut him down. Are you really afraid of Eli Manning in this stage of his career? Because
because they have Odell Beckham and that's it. And the Eagles shut down Odell Beckham with their top five cornerbacks hurt.
And you can get through that offensive line on the Giants.
Oh, yeah, they're not. I mean, last year they were the worst offensive line in football. This year they're still bottom half. And it's Saquon Barkley being good that gets him yardage. But, I mean, you are going against Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks. And that's a different animal than running against, a banged-up Eagles defense.
Right. And, you know, again, I get the matchup heavily favors the Bears. There's no question about that. To me, I think my main concern is it just feels like a major trap game. Because you got the Rams the week after, and you're coming off three straight NFC North teams. And say what you will about the Lions, I know they're not a very good team, but I don't think they're as terrible as some people would say. They're still an NFC North team. They're still very important. And, you know, they gave the Bears a tough game on Thanksgiving, which, you know, I think part of it was due to Bears fatigue and not having Trubisky. But, you know, they gave the Bears a tough time. And, you know, in between those NFC North games and arguably the best team in the NFC outside the Saints and the Rams, you have the Giants. It just kind of feels like a trap game.
Oh, absolutely. I think this, you know, part of it with the, you know, this Lions game, I think was a wake up call a little bit. I'm hoping that will make it so this game isn't a trap game, but I worry that it is a trap game. I don't see Vic Fangio letting that defense have that happen. They are fired up and they want to win. And you listen to the players talk and they're talking with confidence, like, go ahead, try to beat them. And they know what these wins mean. And especially when considering next week, the Vikings play the New England Patriots. So that's, if everything goes as expected, the Bears are going to be 2.5 games up on the division.
You could pretty much kind of put the race away this coming week.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, against the Green Bay Packers, you could lock up the division mathematically and eliminate the Packers from the playoffs at the same time. Wouldn't that be
a dream come true?
That would be a big, 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 big dream come true.
After the Packers have not only taken the Halas Trophy on our turf, but also clinched the division twice in 2 years after that, we want a little revenge here.
I don't know if you heard Aaron Rodgers in the press conference after the loss.
All I heard was, we have this game, win that, this game, win that. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Did you hear what he said about the Bears, though?
We've had success there over the years. Is that what he said?
Yeah. He said, we go to Chicago and we've had success there over the years. I'm just like, really, dude? That was with a John Fox coach team with no quarterback. In that first game, you played against a Bears team that was figuring things out, had a really rough offensive game, and Khalil Mack was not in football shape. Khalil Mack's coming. Khalil Mack is coming, and Mitch Trubisky's ready to play. Is your defense ready to play? How's that bum wheel you got? How's that going to work out for you?
I would love nothing more than like the Bears to win like they beat the Buccaneers or how they beat the Buffalo Bills. Just an absolute thrashing. I don't know if it's going to happen, because until they beat the Packers at home, I always get weary about those matchups. But I mean, I feel like this is the most prime time to beat Aaron Rodgers would be this year. Right now. The Bears got to be favored going to that game.
They have to be. Absolutely, because it's the Packers have not won a game on the road this season.
No, they haven't.
They haven't won a game on the road in, like, what, their last 8 contests?
Was their last road win at Soldier Field with Brett Hundley? Or no. I think it was in Cleveland. Yeah, it was in Cleveland in overtime. That might have been their last road win.
Yeah, it's not a good road team, and you're playing a Bears who play really well at home, and it could be for locking up the division.
You know what I was thinking about the other day? I was thinking about this Bears team, what they would have done to that Brett Hundley Packers team last year.
Oh, man, that would have been ugly.
I think that could have been that. I'm going to go full meatball here. I think the Bears could have shut them out. I'm going to just go full meatball right there. Brett Hundley, quarterback against this Bears defense. They don't score any points.
Bears 31 to -6.
Dang right. You get a couple safeties, you know. Dang right.
So you were not born yet. So I'm going to talk old man here. Is there was a song that defined my childhood. And you may have heard this song before. It's called the Super Bowl Shuffle.
Uh-huh.
Do you know when that song came out?
Wasn't that a week before the Super Bowl? Something like that?
No. That was December 3rd, 1985.
Oh, is that early?
Yes.
Wow.
It came out the day after the only game they lost that season against the Dolphins. So
that's right.
It was over a month before they played their first playoff game.
Wow. Okay.
So that would be like this team dropping that song after the Giants game.
That's funny.
That's how much confidence that there was in that team. That's the point that they were in the season. They were just like, all right, we lost the game, but we're going to beat everybody else. And a little known thing is that the week or two before the Super Bowl, I think it was the week before the Super Bowl, the Patriots came up with their own song where it had Robert Urich and some other Boston celebrities on it. And they talked about how good they were and how they were going to beat the Bears in the Super Bowl.
I never even heard it.
Yeah, I think it was shame. There was deep shame after that because they released that song and a few days later, they just got manhandled. And plus,
what's it called?
It's called like We're the Patriots or something like that.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, it's terrible. But
it's funny because back then, you know, this day and age, they're like one of the most successful franchises in sports, but back in those days, they weren't really known for that.
No, but it's funny because, you know, the Bears, there just was so much confidence. Everybody just knew that they were going to win that Super Bowl. It was just a foregone conclusion, and they went into the playoffs, and they dominated people worse than they did in the regular season, and they finished, you know, 15-1 in the regular season.
And you know what? I see that confidence in this Bears team.
That's why
they're playing confident.
That's where I'm going with this is I get it. The Saints are a tough team to beat. And I thought that Rams team was vulnerable, but I saw that the offensive explosion that they had against the Kansas City Chiefs. And yeah. They're a load to handle too. We'll have a measuring stick on December 9th. But I just see so much confidence in this team. And, you know, once you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. I mean, look at the two Super Bowls that Eli and the Giants won. They were like wild card teams that everybody wrote off. And, you know, they just marched to the Super Bowl. Last year's Eagle team, they were an underdog in every single playoff game.
Yeah, they were.
Remember, they
even
wore
the Super Bowl.
They wore those dog masks. And, you know, this team reminds me a lot of that team where the young quarterback, you know, a young head coach, you know, early in his tenure, that team just celebrated like crazy in, you know, on the field when they did things as a team with their organized activities. And, you know, this past Thursday, you had the Bears with the Bears sing, and which has been an amazing meme or video meme.
Yes, it has. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
I mean, as much as I love the one where they put the Super Bowl shuffle over the top, I have to say that Uptown Girl was my favorite because it just really fit perfectly with it.
There are some songs that fit so beautifully with that dance, and that's why it's so good to see like so many different songs be dubbed over it. That was just awesome. And it's like they're doing all these fun celebrations. They're having fun. They're really loose. I think that the culture has done a complete 180 here. And while I still have my worrisome slight pessimism because of recent history with the Bears, I'm feeling more confident with each win. You know, it's funny. A few weeks ago, I was saying how I think this was going to be an 8-8 team. Hey, they're going to be at least 8-8. They've clinched 8 wins, but you know, every win has made me believe a bit more, and I don't think I'm the only one who thinks that. I'm sure there are plenty of people who thought the way I did, you know, back when they lost to the freaking Miami Dolphins, and you're like, well, you know, here we go. No, they're 8-8 at best. You know, it looks like 2008 or whatever, yada, yada. But no, I mean, this is giving me more confidence, and you know, I pray they can just take care of business here. I want this final stretch to be as enjoyable and least and just not stressful. It's going to be stressful. I know that's not going to be my wish, but I think you win 3 your next 5, you're winning the division. Hands down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even if you win 2 more, I think your chances to win the division are pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the... Let me pull up the Vikings schedule real quick here.
I know it's tough. And while you do that, I wanted to make a little note about last night's Vikings-Packers game because people were kind of going back and forth about, well, who do we root for? I know that if the Vikings would have lost, it would have created more cushion for the Bears. But you know what? That would have really... I mean, okay, you can argue how much it would have kept them alive, but I think it really would have kept Green Bay's hopes alive. And if you watch those last few quote-unquote miracle runs that Rodgers has led his team on over the years, this was always kind of the time of year where things would start turning around. So I think that a win or a loss with Green Bay was pretty much going to determine the rest of the season.
Here's why it was important for the Vikings to win that game. And I understand everyone saying that the Vikings are the better team. They're the Bears' biggest competition to win the division, and it would have given separation. I get it mathematically. But as bad as Green Bay has been, their remaining schedule is Cardinals, Falcons, Bears, Jets, Lions.
That is, honestly, they could probably still reach 8 wins realistically.
Realistically, I think they could win 4 of those 5. And what does that put them? Yeah, that's 8 wins right there.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
8 wins, I think, is very, very, very doable. And had they won last night, that made it, you know, 9 wins. And, you know, granted, the Bears just need, well, I guess the Bears wouldn't still need 2. Because of that half game, you know, tiebreaker thing. I mean, the tie game. It was important to get that loss because if the Bears beat them, like you said, the best they could do is 8 wins. but they've got a lot of powder puff teams on that schedule. But if you look at the Vikings, they've got the Patriots next week, then the Seahawks, then the Dolphins. then the Lions, then the Bears. And that's a tough schedule.
Yeah, that's much tougher than the Packers. And I mean, here's the thing. Could you imagine the Packers squeaking in the playoffs and then having to play the Bears right away? And then playoff Magic Rodgers shows up. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in that scenario.
No. I mean, I just don't think Kirk Cousins has that magic to do that, to take a you know, clearly inferior team and you know, put it up on his shoulders and beat you. I just don't think that he has that magic to beat a superior defense.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's face it. As good as Cousins has been against the Packers, if you had to choose one quarterback, him or Aaron Rodgers, I think the answer is pretty obvious.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine if you had Aaron Rodgers with the two stud wide receivers that Minnesota has?
Yeah, it's no thank you. I would not want to imagine that. And look, I'm not trying to knock Kirk Cousins and say it's impossible for him to, you know, win anything significant. You never know. But fact of the matter is, Aaron Rodgers is the last guy that the Bears want to face in a big situation.
Oh, yeah. This is not a knock on Kirk Cousins at all. Is this team last year had an absolute just dominant defense, and they needed a better quarterback, an upgraded quarterback to help their offense play better. And that defense took a step backwards, and they've had injuries. And sometimes it's been that offense that's had to carry them, and that offense has been very good. Both those wide receivers and Dalvin Cook at running back have been very good. Kirk Cousins has at times played phenomenally. But against the Bears, Dalvin Cook looked awful, and Kirk Cousins looked scared.
Well, I just think that goes to show how good our defense is.
Absolutely, it goes to show you there that the Bears defense,
which is why I'm so tired of, you know, people saying, "Oh, the Bears haven't played anyone good. Oh, you know, they're just beating bad teams." It's like, have you watched them? Have you seen what they've done to quarterbacks? Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is on the Seahawks right now. This team, they're on fire. And you know what? It's the same team that they played the Bears, and the Bears dominated them. Everyone's now back on the Vikings. Look what they did to the Packers on prime time, and Kirk Cousins outdueled Aaron Rodgers, and this team is getting primed for the playoffs. Well, yeah. Well, what did you say last week when the Bears dominated them?
Oh, the Vikings aren't that good. They lost to the Bills.
Yeah. So this isn't college football. This isn't college football where people vote on who's the best. And if you beat a team 74-0, looks better than if you beat them 35-34. This is the NFL. There's no voting. It is how many W's do you have? Is it more W's than a team in your division? If so, you win that division, you go to the playoffs. And there's no ties to win or lose. And the team that doesn't lose a game in the playoffs, they are the champion. That's how it goes. So it doesn't matter. If the Bears would have played the Arizona Cardinals 16 times this season and been 16-0, it does not matter if they have a signature win. If let their signature win be them hoisting that Super Bowl trophy, that's all that matters. I would rather have them go, oh, they didn't have a signature win and then be Super Bowl champions than having signature wins and losing in the first round of the playoffs.
Do you think that fans of the 2011 Giants cared about like a 9-win record in the regular season? Nope. I don't think so.
Look what they did.
They went to Lambeau Field and beat a Packers team that was 15-1. Granted, that team was probably one of the most overrated teams in football history, but still, you know, then they went to San Francisco and they had to beat the 49ers, who a lot of people had going to the Super Bowl after the Packers were eliminated. They beat them on the road. And then they took on Tom Brady, beat them. They gonna care about not having double digit wins? No.
And that's how it goes. It doesn't matter. As long as you make the playoffs, you start from scratch. Obviously the top two seeded teams get a bye that first round, and they get home field advantage, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they won 16 games and you only won 9, to almost twice as many. It all that matters is at the end of that game, what is the score?
Exactly.
But looking at this Bears game from Thanksgiving Day, it was a tough win. It was a very tough win. And I never felt that the Bears weren't the best team on the field at any point. But whenever you are playing a team for the second time in 11 days, and it's a division opponent, it's just a slugging match. It's real hard to beat a team two times in a season. And when you do, it doesn't matter how many, how good you are versus how bad they are. It is a tough matchup. And you had your backup quarterback in, and this was a tough win. And the Vikings caught a lot of breaks. Some of them were penalties weren't called. Sometimes it was penalties were called. Sometimes it was a tip pass that should have ended a scoring drive and got caught.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
They hung on, and their defense played pretty stout against a backup quarterback. It showed the fact that both of these teams had played on short rest, and the Bears on 85 hours of, rest. It showed in their play against the run.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Blunt was running all over them, and it was frustrating as heck, but looking back at it, you understand. They were tired. And it was probably their worst performance against the run since that game in Miami.
Absolutely. The one nice thing about winning a really hard-fought game like this that you really struggled at points, and a facet of your game that usually you dominate in, you struggled a little bit, was that you can go back and find so many flaws and so many things to correct, and it makes it hard for you to look past the New York Giants in the next game, because you watch this game film, you're like, look how hard we had to fight against this team that we're way better than. That's how hard we had to fight, and we need to clean these things up. If we play run defense like we did against the Lions, the Giants are going to kill us.
Yeah, with Saquon Barkley, obviously I think that they'll be much more rested, and I really don't think there was anything that terribly played. I just think they were tired. That was the main reason.
So, there's definitely things they're going to have to watch on film, and they're going to have to pick up challenge themselves to stop that New York Giants run. And I think they can do it. I think they're going to bring an eighth man in the box, and they're going to challenge Eli to beat them with his arm. And Eli loves to throw interceptions. He loves to throw them. That's his bag. And if you tease him and let him think that Odell Beckham is open, you will get good results.
I think that Eddie Jackson may be itching for some more picks this coming week. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson is phenomenal. I mean, what does he have? 8 touchdown returns in a season, a little over a season and a half.
That's more than teams combined.
Yes. And he is one away from being second all time in defensive touchdown scored in Bears history. That would be Mike Brown, number 2. Charles Tillman would be number 1. I think he has 15. So you're like halfway there in a season and a half.
That's insane. The way he reads the ball, is just, it's a thing of beauty, because he just comes in, swoops, and there's no one there to even touch him. It is an absolute thing of beauty.
I mean, and part of it is he just studies the game and he trusts his instincts. Is that pass with that he intercepted and took for six against the Lions. When you hear him talk about it, he said that he knew that pass was going there. And based on the receiver that was trying to get it, is he knew he was not going to go out and reach for it, that the ball was going to have to come to him, and he just had to beat him to the ball. And he said once he realized that the running back was not going to go out in the flat and was staying in, he knew exactly where the ball was going, and he just broke on it. And there you go. Instincts and film study. When you get those two meshed, good things happen.
It's almost like you can put Eddie Jackson pick six on a bingo chart for every game.
Yeah, and it was funny. I tweeted it out. I was like, it's about time for Matt Stafford to throw a pick six. And the very next drive, he threw a pick six.
Yeah.
Is
like, let's face it. The secondary won the game for the Bears. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. The front seven kept, you know, here's the thing about when you have a dominant defense that stops the run and gets after the quarterback, is it makes the other team completely change the way they play offense.
Just going to bring this up. Yes.
Is you can't establish the run. You can't go in that game thinking you're going to establish the run. This is not like, you know, there's when you hear analysts talk about, well, you can't just give up on the run. You have to keep running. That's under the assumption that you're getting 2-3 yards a carry. But when you're getting 0 and -1 yards per carry, it's real hard to keep running the ball, because you're going to have a whole lot of 3 and outs or 3rd and longs. And when you get 3rd and longs against his Bears, they come at you. They are not only just very talented in getting to you, they're blitzing. They're blitzing a lot more than Vic Fangio usually blitzes. And Roquan Smith is an absolute beast when it comes to blitzing.
Oh, absolutely. I think the point that I really want to make is you can see how the Vikings adjusted their game plan. It was quick passes. And those quick passes were short plays. They didn't really have much throwing down the field, because they weren't. They were just trying to get off these quick passes. You know, Matthew Stafford was throwing for what, like 5 yards per pass? It was just kind of like, you know, check down, check down, check down. There was really no deep plays. A lot of their big plays were on running plays, you know, because Blunt had that really big game, but, you know, Stafford wasn't gunslinging downfield because they were trying to go fast. And a lot of people ask, well, why didn't Khalil Mack do anything? Where's he been? He didn't really have a chance to do anything because they were getting the playoffs so fast. But, you know, they wanted to not have Stafford get killed by the Bears front seven. So they figured, hey, let's get rid of the ball before they even have a chance to get him.
Yeah, that was their game plan going into this, especially knowing that the Bears were playing a backup quarterback, is they were going to move the ball, maintain time of possession, keep the score low, and then make a play at the end of the game.
Which was then intercepted by Eddie Jackson and taken to the house.
Yeah, it was. They didn't make that play. They gave that play away. But they did. I mean, look at the time of possession. They really dominated in that department. They were better on the ground, and they got quite a few first downs. The Bears really struggled with having a backup quarterback. Sure, he made a lot of plays, but they didn't run the same offense that they would have had with Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, no, it would have been much different. And I think the point that I always want to make about evaluating Daniel when looking at his game is you got to remember that he is a backup quarterback, a backup system quarterback, keyword system. He's a backup for a reason. he's not going to be going out there making the fancier plays, the rushing plays, some of the crazy throws that Mitch Trubisky is able to do. If he was able to do that, he wouldn't be a backup. But when you're a backup system quarterback, your game plan is going to be much simpler, and it's going to be to Matt Nagy's system. And, you know, I think overall he executed fairly well. I think if you look at his game and wanted to give it a one-word grade, it would be fine. It was a fine game. He didn't do anything to lose you the game. He made some nice throws. Was he perfect? No. He didn't really win you the game, but he was fine. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah, that's very fair. I got some more points on that. I have a couple more points on the defense that I wanted to bring up. There were so many missed holding calls on Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks that it was a joke. And that was frustrating because if these referees, I think they feel bad. If they call the hold every time that one of those guys was held, teams would be at like 3rd and 47. It's embarrassing how many they're missing. But going into this game, LeGarrette Blount was averaging 2.3 yards per carry on 78 carries this season. So this team didn't learn to block, and LeGarrette Blount didn't learn to hit the hole better in 1 week. This was the product of 85 hours of rest before playing another game. I think but here's some stats for you. Roquan Smith, in 4 of his last 7 games, he's got at least 10 tackles. And in that 7 game span, he has 63 tackles and 3 sacks. He's now tied with Akeem Hicks for 2nd on the team in sacks. And he ranks in the top 11 in the NFL in tackles. I think we've forgotten, you know, we've moved past that this guy was a holdout and missed all of training camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's safe to say that we got a player with that pick.
Yeah, dang right. You think I care about that holdout now? I don't think anyone does. Just as I tweeted yesterday.
We do not. Prince Amukamara allowed in that Lions game, allowed 2 catches for a total of how many yards? 4. 2 catches for 4 yards. And Leonard Floyd led the team with 4 quarterback hurries.
I like it.
I like it too. You know, the Bears had, you know, the Lions had a couple of big plays and some, you know, questionable missed calls and questionable calls that aided them, and a turnover that we'll talk about in a minute. That's really their whole offensive game plan. It's had the Bears had their starting quarterback in, I think they would have opened the floodgates and really blown this one open.
Oh, I agree. I think a lot of people would agree with that.
You know, because we mentioned it, they clearly missed Mitch. And if you can watch this game and you don't see how good Mitch Trubisky is getting, you're either a liar or you're blind.
Look at what he can do. I mean, Chase Daniel, no disrespect to him, but didn't you miss a lot of the things that Trubisky could do when Chase Daniel was in there? Even though Chase Daniel did enough to help them win, I certainly miss Trubisky.
Yeah, and it's funny, you mentioned he was fine. I actually wrote down, okay.
Fine, okay. Yeah, around the same thing.
Yeah. You know, his arm is not as big as Trubisky's. His pocket presence isn't the same as Trubisky's. You know, he can't run like Trubisky. He knows the system, and that's where his value is, that you don't have to change the game plan because he's not getting a lot of reps, because he's played in a similar system for a long time and knows the head coach. So that's where his value is, because here's the thing, is in order to get good, and you need to practice, you need to practice those plays that you're running to perfect them. And The QB1 typically gets 90% of the snaps, and QB2 gets the other 10%. So if you have a young backup quarterback, the problem becomes you don't have anybody that's working those reps to get where they need to be. And, you know, you can teach them all the plays and on film, and they can learn all those things. But if they have to come in cold, that's why you have to, when you get a backup quarterback in there, they truncate the game plan, make it smaller, slow it down, because it's tough for them because they're not in there. They may know the plays, but they don't always know the timing of the play. And, you know, even Chase Daniel is, as long as he's been in the system and knows it, look at that 2-point conversion they had. That was a disaster.
Yeah, I did not like that call at all. But when they were doing that from the start, it's don't do that.
Yeah, and that's a guy that knows the system. So that's the beauty of Chase Daniel, is he knows the system, but he's nowhere near as good as Mitch Trubisky. And I'm not saying Mitch Trubisky is get his Hall of Fame plaque ready. I'm just saying that the guy is he's definitely a top 10 quarterback in this league, and he's getting better. There's definitely times when you go, oh man, what the hell? But those times are getting less often and less number of them. And the number of times where he's doing something great and making something out of nothing is going up. That's what you want to see, the trend.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? I think that it's really important to kind of remember that just because you have a backup quarterback that didn't turn the ball over doesn't mean that when Mitch Trubisky turns the ball over means, oh, well, Chase Daniels, you got to go in there. It's just don't be like that. It's great that Daniels didn't turn the ball over. It's great. He was, when it came to throwing, since he's a system quarterback, he was smart. The pocket presence was not as smart, but throwing wise, he didn't turn it over. He didn't make any big mistakes. He was smart with the ball. But Trubisky is going to be doing a lot more. And when you do a lot more, you're probably going to get picked off more. I mean, that's just the way of it.
Here's Chase Daniel was 1 for 5 on passes over 20 yards. He was 21 for 24 for 127 yards on passes less than 10 yards. That's a game manager.
Yeah. I mean, I think to me it was kind of a slightly more productive version of Brian Hoyer, because at least he could throw to the end zone and get touchdowns. He had two of them.
Yeah, and I'm not going to knock Chase. It's nice that you don't have to truncate that playbook because you have your backup quarterback in, and that makes you a more dangerous offense. But I mean, those first two drives, the first series looked like he just was super nervous because his throws were errant. And the second drive, he got sacked because he didn't have pocket awareness. So it was two drives that he ended because of his play. So, you know, he managed the game well, and they did enough to win, but you sorely missed having QB1.
Right. And you know what? I got to say, I'm pretty glad that Chase Daniel is the backup. If there's a guy I want as a backup, it would be a guy who knows the system, a.k.a. Chase Daniel. I think he proved that if he needed to come in, you can trust him more than a lot of other backups. So I give him a lot of credit there. I think the biggest credit that I give Daniel in that game was he kept doing his thing, and he was getting pounded at one point. I mean, he had the shot at his legs. He was getting kind of beat up, but he kept getting up and playing hard. I got to give him a lot of credit for that. And that throw to Tariq Cohen for the go-ahead touchdown, that, you know, it wasn't the game winning, but it was a go-ahead touchdown. That was a pretty nice fade throw to Tariq Cohen after overshooting him earlier in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. There was times where I think there was the one where it looked like his knee went the wrong way slightly. And I was like, oh no, it's Tyler Bray time. Oh no. That was very worrisome.
But hey, he kept in there and he got a Thanksgiving dub. So
absolutely. But one thing I've concluded from this game is that the Bears don't care about running the football. They don't care.
I was literally thinking the same thing after the game. It's obvious. If they're going to throw as much as they did with Chase Daniel against a division opponent with your backup quarterback, they're not going to be running the
ball. A division opponent? It's not like they were doing it against the Vikings. They were doing it against the Lions, who I believe are the 24th ranked run defense. So if you're not going to run it against the Lions with your backup quarterback in after a short rest, then you're not running the ball. You just don't care. It's not like they're woeful. They just don't care.
No, I mean, they didn't run the ball much at all. The one notable run in the game was the run that sealed it when Tariq Cohen was literally carried by his brother over the first down marker, which was a thing of beauty.
Oh, yeah. That, I actually made a note of that. Is James Daniels just absolutely sealed that victory right there because they were definitely short, and he pretty much single-handedly carried him over that first down mark and sealed the game. I mean, I think they would have won anyway, but you don't want to give them any hope of winning that game. And that's what he did, is you mathematically took it away.
It was awesome.
That's why that guy, I was so excited when they drafted him, because that's the type of thing you get. He's a really good football player and he is smart and there's a mean streak in him. And here's the thing. If you look at the offensive line in this game, James Daniels gave up zero quarterback pressures. Cody Whitehair gave up zero quarterback pressures. Bobby Massey gave up one quarterback hit. Witzman gave up two pressures. And in a weird one, because he's been good, very, very good this season, is Charles Leno gave up a season high of three quarterback pressures. So that offensive line was pass blocking really well.
Yeah, they were. And that helped out a quarterback that's only made a handful of starts in his career. So a good team effort right there to help your QB out. But that play, when that play was made, I was watching at my grandparents with my brother, and we just started yelling and cheering when that happened, because we knew right there, as every Bears fan did, that the game was over when that happened. Because, you know, it was two plays for like no gain, and the Lions had their timeouts, so they were taking timeouts after every play. And I'm thinking, crap, they're going to have to punt and let's see what happens here. But then that play was made and it just sunk in. They were 3-0 in those three games against the NFC North. So what a way to seal it. A teamwork right there. It's like, that's more teamwork right there than we've seen anyone on the Bears do in a long time. Just a few years ago, you had Pernell McPhee yelling at Jay Cutler on the sidelines, and now you have your lineman scooping up your petite little running back and carrying him over the line.
Yeah, it was. I was watching in my mother-in-law's kitchen. She was making stuff to bring over for Thanksgiving dinner, and I was watching it on this tiny little TV in her kitchen. And she must think I'm a lunatic, because I'm I'm ranting and raving, and my 4-year-old daughter, just coincidentally, because she heard me once say "boom roasted" from the Office reference. When I'm cheering, I was like, after that block, she went "boom roasted," and I was like, "That's right, Detroit boom roasted."
Just like the turkey. Did you see the GIF I made by any chance?
No, I didn't.
So it's on my profile. It's my pinned tweet. I replaced the football that Stafford threw to Eddie Jackson for the pick six with a turkey.
That's funny. But, you know, going into the season, I think everybody was saying that Jordan Howard wasn't a fit for Matt Nagy's offense. And we all thought it was because he can't catch. But little did we know that the reason he's not a fit for this offense is because they don't care about running.
Yeah, no, they just don't run the ball.
Man, whatever. We'll pass it. Oh, you third and one? We'll pass it. Whatever.
Well, look at some of the game ceiling first downs away from this game. You look at the game against the Vikings. Now, Trubisky threw on third down late in the game and picked up first downs. Usually those are areas where you run the ball, but they were still throwing it with Trubisky.
Yeah, absolutely. In this game, I still thought some of the play calling was wonky. I still, you know, we're going to see a better version of this offense next year. I think Matt Nagy's still feeling out being a play caller and being a head coach. And
sure,
after this season is over, I guarantee he's going to go back and he's going to rewatch all the games and look at his play calling, and he's going to clean things up, and he's going to say, man, this didn't work well, or this did work well, or try to introduce some new things, some new wrinkles in there. And, but he's still learning on the fly here. There was a couple of plays where I still just threw my hands up. Like there was a play where it was second and 10 and the Bears were down by 7 at that point. And they ran a delayed sweep, and it left them third and long. I mean, luckily they followed up with that 29-yard completion to Allen Robinson, but still, that was a bad play call that they had to get bailed out on.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I know it's probably harder for Matt Nagy when his backup is in there, but it could also be easier in certain situations because you know exactly what he's going to bring as a system quarterback, so... You know, I don't know. I think that it wasn't perfect by Matt Nagy. None of the games have been perfect, but I think the good really outweighs the bad.
Oh, absolutely. It's every once in a while he throws in a head scratcher. There was another one with that double pass that was just too cute sometimes.
That was weird.
Yeah.
They got the first down, but
even when it works, you're just like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, I just kind of, I tilted my head to the side like a confused creature and was like, what?
You remember Chris Cluey?
Yes.
He's a longtime Vikings punter.
Yes.
I don't know if you follow him on Twitter. He's one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter. This is a tangent. He just tweeted out, "Attention Hollywood, a buddy comedy starring Guy Fieri and Gritty teaming up to take down fascists. Title, It's a G Thing. Press send." I love that guy. That's all he does is just sit there and play video games and tweet all day.
That sounds like a good life.
Let's see. The Bears offense, I thought they were okay considering, but there was that big fumble by Trey Burton. And I think that was a potential game changer in the negative way.
Oh yeah. And I was at that point of the game, I was driving to my grandparents, and Jeff Joniak said pretty much the same thing. Let's face it. That was a really terrible game for Trey Burton. Not going to worry about it, though. Everyone has a bad game. But yeah, it was not a good game by him.
No, he had some drops, some penalties, the fumble. And you know, if this was Deion Sims, where it was like a regular, where he just was a mess, I'd be worried. But Trey Burton has been good for the Bears.
Right.
He's going to shake this off.
Everyone has bad games.
Yeah, and that was a very good play by the defense. It wasn't like he just coughed it up. It was, there's a difference between you fumbling and somebody causing you to fumble.
Right.
And that was the perfect peanut punch.
Yeah, it was probably the best defensive play the Lions made in that game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There was another catch by Allen Robinson where he actually took the ball away from Darius Slay. That was a huge one.
That was big.
So that was a big play. What else do I have here? Chase Daniel, it was a bunch of times. We talk, the negative media will talk about Mitch Trubisky missing, not seeing open receivers. There was a bunch that Chase Daniel didn't see. And I think that's a product of just not being on the field. Is he missed a lot of guys, just not missing by the throw, just not seeing a guy open.
Yeah, there was the play where he had Allen Robinson wide open, which would have been a touchdown, and then he got sacked. I think that's the one that stood out the most.
That was the blatant one, yeah. But there was several other ones that were, you know, not as big of plays and less blatant.
Yeah.
There was that offensive pick that they called, the offensive pass interference that negated a touchdown. That was a bad call. And then you had that Chase Daniel one where if he would have been throwing it to any normal sized person, it would have been a touchdown, but it was like 2 inches past Tariq Cohen and his little arms.
Yeah. To Allen Robinson, that's an easy six.
Yeah. To Miller or Robinson, that's a six right there. And to Tariq Cohen, you need to throw that 1 inch shorter.
Yep. Yeah. No, that's, or he, yeah.
But overall, you know, they came out with the win. They did what they needed to do. There's a lot of room for improvement. I mean, nothing like, oh, major overhaul. Like this was Jacksonville Jaguars where they're firing their offensive coordinator and benching Blake Bortles and et cetera, et cetera. This is just going back and cleaning a few things up and getting back to where you were. And a lot of it will just be mentally and physically getting rested.
Yeah, exactly. It was nothing major. Obviously, if it was major, they probably would have lost the game, but you did enough good things to win. And even when you're on very short rest and you're not having your starting quarterback in there, goes to show that they still did a lot of good things, even if, when it wasn't nearly their cleanest game of the year.
I've got a few notes. Some of them are Bears and some are just NFL. Mm-hmm. The first one is definitely Bears related. Ryan Pace on day one said, "We're going to build this team via the draft." As of that game and this season, 77.8% of his draft picks contribute to this this 2018 Bears team. If you only go by, if you, you know, exclude his very first draft, the one where he didn't have a full period to evaluate, he got hired, not too long before the draft. If you take away that first draft, 90.5% of his draft picks have contributed to this team. That is good. That is how you build sustained winning football.
And a lot of people like to criticize Ryan Pace, but I think a lot of people are coming around. And look, I get it. A lot of things didn't go right the first few years, but he had a lot of crap to clean up. But you look at the drafts he's had so far, it's looking fantastic. And, you know, I think every Bears fan can admit there was nervousness with him after a while, but we're seeing the good that's finally coming out of it. And I think Bears fans as a whole are really on board with Ryan Pace and what he's done now.
The criticism is because some of the marquee picks he haven't turned out. But if you look, if you take away his first round picks and you just look at picks from rounds 2 through 7, he's as good, if not better, than anybody else.
And
in
you
the
know
league.
What? Your next two first round picks are Khalil Mack. So, yeah.
Yeah. Those are home runs. And you know, the one where people knock him is Kevin White. And that one's just a bad break. And that was meant to be a pun. Is, yeah, there's no way to know some guy's bones are just going to break every season. That was just, you know, it sucks that happened. There's no way to know that's going to happen. And then Leonard Floyd, we still haven't got a full picture of Leonard Floyd yet. But we've seen a lot of good play from him over the last 4 or 5 games. So we can't write him off at all. And then you got Mitch Trubisky, who's your future quarterback, and Roquan Smith, who is already one of the best inside linebackers in football. So
how are those 49ers?
It's not as bad as you think. It is all. That is one of my other notes. Is you go back and look to that draft where supposedly the 49ers fleeced the Bears. Solomon Thomas can't get to the quarterback. Reuben Foster was released. and C.J. Beathard is hurt and not good. So how's that fleece looking now?
Changes the perspective a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're fighting for that first overall pick, and we have the third best record in the NFC. I will take it too. Let's see. These are two Packer notes. I found this absolutely hilarious. Packers fans think that Fackrell is just as good as Khalil Mack.
Yeah, I'm going to sort of disagree with that there. Yeah. I hope you got the reference there.
Yeah, that was Office Space. But he's not good, period. And he's not Khalil Mack. I mean, if you ask 32 general managers in the NFL, would they rather have Khalil Mack or Fackrell? It's going to be 32-0.
Didn't Collinsworth even say he's not as good as Khalil Mack on the broadcast?
Yes. Absolutely. Is because a guy that Khalil Mack absolutely dominated with a double team, Fackrell couldn't get past him one-on-one. So, Packers fans are delusional. Also, this is a fact stat that I did not know. Do you know what Aaron Rodgers' record is when trailing by more than 1 point in the fourth quarter versus teams with a winning record?
Isn't it like 0-31?
0-37.
Close.
How crazy is that? I would have never guessed that.
I wouldn't have either. I would not have either. I know that stat's a little arbitrary because different teams have different records at certain points of the season, but I wouldn't have guessed that.
But I mean, overall, I mean, if that's 0-5, you could be like, oh, you know, maybe they won some against a good team. Second game of the season, they were 0-1 or whatever. Or they were 1-1. But after 37 games, at some point, that becomes a trend.
Now, wait a minute. They said going into the fourth quarter?
When trailing by more than 1 point in the fourth quarter.
By trailing. Okay. All right. Okay. By trailing more than one. So going into the fourth quarter, trailing more than 1 point.
Yes, versus teams with a winning record.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to remember week 17 in 2013. Because was that... I thought they were trailing more, but did they not consider the Bears a winning record because they finished 8-8?
I don't know. Not sure. But...
Were the Packers winning going to the fourth quarter? Then the Bears took the lead. I blocked that game out of my memory, so I don't know.
Let's find out.
You could look that up. I don't even want to look at anything associated with that game.
Schedule.
So many nightmares. I just remember the final score was 33-28.
That's correct. It was. Because going into the fourth quarter, it was 21-20 Bears. Oh, but they were 8-8, so that was not a winning team.
Right, so they counted that at the end. So the loss put them at 8-8. When they were playing them, they were 8-7.
Correct.
Okay.
Either way, still a funny stat. And the last thing I wanted to talk about is, I don't know if you saw this, but Trey Quinn scored his first NFL touchdown, and he did the scarn.
I did. I did see that.
I was like, I saw that before they called the scar and they showed the touchdown. And I went, I've seen that dance. I know that dance. I've watched that show enough times. I know that dance.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
That might have been my favorite non-Bears foot touchdown celebration.
Yeah.
So that's all I had about Bears and football. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I think Bears, I said my piece. I guess one more playoff / NFC North thing I wanted to bring up is going back to that game last night between the Vikings and the Packers. Ask me if I'm just a complete meatball, or I'm not necessarily believing this, but if you watched Aaron Rodgers the past few games, does it look like to me he just doesn't care? I don't think that's the case, but the expression just doesn't look as, do you know what I mean? I can't describe
there was
it.
There was the one play that was a touchdown, a potential touchdown that Adams dropped. And just the look on his Aaron Rodgers' face, I think he's done. I think he's fed up.
And part of me can't blame him. I mean, he hasn't had a lot of support around him for a while. The only thing I'm going to say is he signed the extension. He stayed with this organization on his own terms. But at the same time, I would probably be frustrated with a lot of things. If you want to take that money, then yeah, fine. Just keep in mind that he chose to stay with the organization.
Yeah, I mean, he chose that. I have a feeling that he's going to have a new head coach next year.
And you know what? That can do a lot of good things for them, I think.
But it's he, you're right. He chose to sign that extension, and you know, part of being a very, very, very highly paid position player is it leaves less money to put talent around you.
Yeah, exactly. I also think that while for, you know, the last few years, Green Bay's kind of been going on a decline. And most of that, you can't blame on Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers has put the team on his back and he is, you know, still one of the best there ever was. But I just, this year, I feel like he's missing a lot more throws than he has in any time in his career. Look at last night. He should have had a touchdown pass. He overthrew it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I just wonder, is he not 100% healthy? Is he just so fed up mentally that he's not focused? I don't know. A lot of people are saying, oh, you know what? Aaron Rodgers may be done. I don't believe that's going to be the case. I think if you give him a new coach next year, a new scheme, he's going to play as good as ever. And if he's fully healthy. I just think there's a lot of things that are going wrong with him and around things right now where, yeah, it's a lot of the fault of the team for not being very good around him. It's a lot of the fault of Mike McCarthy, but you know, some blame does have to fall on Aaron Rodgers. There are some throws that he usually makes that he hasn't made in the past few games.
Oh, I fully agree with that. I fully, fully agree with that. I don't know what the answer is, but Mike McCarthy is going to be the fall guy for this team regardless.
And if you ask me, he's good as gone. Unless the Packers somehow, some way, pull a playoff appearance out of their ass this year, he's gone. Even if they win 8-9 games, they don't make the playoffs, he's gone.
I think he gets fired once they're mathematically eliminated. I don't think he lasts the whole season.
You know, I was almost kind of wondering if I was going to wake up this morning, look at my phone, and see Packers part ways with Mike McCarthy. Not going to lie. I thought there was a chance he was going to get fired after yesterday's game.
And one more thing I wanted to say is, you know, I've read a few reports that based on how good the Bears defense has been and his overall track record, is that there's a good chance that Vic Fangio could leave for a head coaching gig.
I read that too.
Here's my thinking is it's a copycat league. Teams are looking for, you know, what's working, and that is young, offensive-minded head coaches and not old, crotchety defensive coordinators. And it's not a knock on him. He's just an old, crotchety defensive coordinator. And if this was the 80s, he absolutely would have a job at the end of the season as a head coach. So I think that prime opportunities are not going to be looking for him. If teams are looking for to hire him, it's going to be a bad situation that he's not going to want to go to. The Browns, they're going to go offensive coach. They're not hiring an old crotchety defensive coordinator. The Jets, they're going to go offensive minded coach. Green Bay is the wild card, but most of the other situations where it's going to be possibly open up, probably not going to be something on high on his list. He's one of the better, he's paid very, very well. Mm-hmm. So is it going to be something where he wants to give up a cushy winning position that he's been in with the players he knows? You know, if it's not a right fit, I don't know if he leaves. And second of all, if he does leave, look for the Bears to bring in Todd Bowles to be the defensive coordinator. He's had a lot of success. He's very, very knows Matt Nagy very, very well, and he's going to get fired from the Jets as their head coach.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just not thinking. I'm just not thinking that far ahead right now. We still got a season to finish up.
Yeah, I agree. I just it just popped up, and I figured I would acknowledge that. It's as far as coordinators leaving, it would suck, but at least I think we have the right answer going forward. The last thing I want to talk about is, the Bulls, I was gone for the better part of a week, so I have not watched Bulls.
You missed nothing.
Yeah, no.
Missed the point guards not scoring a single point like the entire game against, there's something like that against the Heat. I don't know. I didn't see it.
I was reading tweets from Big Dave, and I was like, I DVR'd these games. I don't know if I want to go back and watch. So I will just watch it. Dave's show. We have not hyped that show enough on here. Is if you even remotely like Bulls basketball, is the show on Comcast Sportsnet, or what's the new name of the station? It's NBC Sports Chicago.
NBC Sportsnet Chicago, yeah.
So after the Bulls post game is Bulls Outsiders featuring our friend Big Dave from Bow. He's one of the three hosts on there, and he's fantastic. It's a fun show to watch, even if you're not a huge basketball guy. It is three fans that do a great job talking Bulls that are fans. They're not professionals, and it's a good time. It's like sitting in a living room with your buddies.
Oh, it's a great listen.
So definitely check it out. It's after every single Bulls game, so 82 times a season. So definitely check them out. And you know, I got most of my Bulls fixed this week from him just because they weren't on in Philadelphia. We got the 76ers game for some reason. but I want to talk Blackhawks. And the conversation I was planning to have took a significant turn yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
I did not expect it either. And, you know, if you're not up to date yet, what we're talking about is the Blackhawks traded what they considered to be their number one center of the future, Nick Schmaltz, for Brendan Perlini and Dylan Strome from Arizona.
You know, there was a lot of mixed reaction, but I kind of like this move. I'll be completely honest with you.
You know, it's definitely a bold move, and I think it's going to be the right move, but Nick Schmaltz put himself in this position. You know, not long ago, Schmaltz was anointed the number one future center of this team, and the Blackhawks were basically squirreling money away for his big payday when he becomes a restricted free agent in July. And, you know, right now, instead of getting ready to sign his big contract extension with the Blackhawks, he's an Arizona Coyote along with Nick Jalmerson, Vinny Hinestroza, Richard Panik, Ranta, Osterley, Hossa, and Boland.
It's insane. I swear, the Blackhawks only trade with the Hurricanes and the Coyotes.
It's true. But here's the thing is, if you go back and look at the first round picks for the Blackhawks since 2011, here's where we're at. 2011, Mark McNeil traded. 2011, Philip Deneau traded. 2012, Teuvo Teravainen traded. 2013, Ryan Hartman traded. 2014, Nick Schmaltz traded. 2015, didn't have one. 2016, didn't have one. The cupboard, as far as your first round picks, is absolutely bare.
Yeah, you know what? And people were quoting Stan Bowman, you know, saying how, oh, they were going to build these picks and now they traded them away. Look, we have criticized Bowman a lot, rightfully so, for a number of things. But if there's going to be some areas I would defend Stan Bowman, it would be with some of these guys. Because go and look at that list. How many of them are tearing it up in the NHL?
I've got the list right here. And it was right after the Blackhawks lost in the first round of the playoffs in 2016. He emphasized growth within the organization to keep the cup window open. And he specifically mentioned Vinny Hinestroza, Ryan Hartman, Mark McNeil, Tanner Caro, Mott, Bond, and Ville Poka. And you're right. Absolutely none of those have panned out, and he decided to move on. And I'm sad about Ville Poka because I really liked Ville Poka, and I have a game-worn autographed jersey for breast cancer awareness from the Rockford IceHogs game of Ville Poka and a picture of my daughter with Ville Poka. So I'm always going to be a Ville Poka fan, but he's not tearing it up.
No, none of those guys really are. I mean, is Mark McNeil even still like in the league? He's played like what, two career games in the NHL with the Hawks? Because he was involved in the Oduya trade, if I remember correctly.
Mark.
He was a big time prospect in, say, 2011, and then I guess he just wasn't big enough for the NHL, and he just didn't have it for the NHL.
Let's see. His NHL career,
yep.
Two games played.
Yep. So when he was traded to Dallas, he never played with the Stars.
No, he played one game.
Oh, he did?
He played one game with the Blackhawks in the 2015-2016 season, one game with Dallas 2016-2017.
Okay. Right. Still.
And apparently now he's in the Bruins farm system. let's see.
But you're getting my overall point here.
This season he is playing for the Providence Bruins. Yes. And last season he played for the Milwaukee Admirals.
You know, I think I do remember that actually. I just wasn't sure where he was this year.
Where he was a minus five. So, and then he was somehow went to the Texas Stars for the second half, for the part of the second half of that season, where he was in 18 games, was a minus 10.
Oh boy.
So, yeah. Ville Poka is currently playing in the KHL.
Is he really?
Yes. Yes. I'm looking here.
He didn't play that much in the NHL. I don't remember. I mainly just remember him playing on the Ice Hogs.
Yeah, he played 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons with the Ice Hogs. Went to the Belleville Senators, and now he is playing for the Avangard Omsk of the Continental Hockey League, the KHL.
Okay, then.
So, yeah, I mean, none of those guys are tearing it up. But here's another stat. Second City Hockey did a top 25 under 25 list for the Blackhawks in 2015. Here's their top 10. Tavo, Marco Dano, Artemi Panarin, Andrew Shaw, Nick Schmaltz, Ville Poka, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Ryan Hartman, Philip Deneau, Mark McNeil. Not a one is left.
Not one. Obviously, the most successful on that list is Panarin.
Yes.
No question.
And followed by Tavo. Both of those guys are good.
And Tavo, sure.
And Tavo, both of those guys, and we can articulate why they were gone. Tavo is you had to sweeten the pot to get rid of a bad contract. And Panarin, he doesn't play defense. And you needed to bring a two-way player in. And you got Saad back. So
I also think that there was some future cap concerns.
There was definitely
with Panarin as well.
Definitely some future cap concerns. But with all that said, I'm okay with this this move. Schmaltz is going to be due a lot of money coming in July, and you don't know what you have with him. He had a breakout year last year, but this year has been pretty bad. He has no goals in his last 8 games and only 1 goal in his last 15 games. And he's gone from being the absolute second line center to being a third line winger.
Yeah. And that's why it's like, well, if things aren't going to work out here, you might as well get something for him. So you got the two guys. One is reuniting with Alex Zibrinkit. They played together in Stromy. He's young. I think he's early 20s, maybe 21, 22. So I'm kind of excited to see what he can do here, playing around his old buddy.
He's 21.
He's 21, yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, but you know the thing with Schmaltz is your fear is that you're going to sign him to a Brian Bickle contract, where he's absolutely gives you nothing once he gets paid. And, you know, this is not a knock on Brian Bickle because we found out why he couldn't play anymore later on, but it was still a situation where you paid a guy a lot of money and he just couldn't play and live up to that contract. And it cost you Tavo Teravainen because of it. But, you don't know what you have. And it was a situation where he was forcing you into a position of having to pay, you know, Stromy and Perlini are still under contract. They're both high draft picks, high ceiling guys, and change of scenery type guys. Stromy was the number 3 overall pick in 2015, and Perlini was the 14th overall pick in 2014. You know, looking at this, if you consider either one of these guys potential building pieces for your organization within, you know, the next week or so, you expect Stromy to be the second line center and Perlini to be in your top 9 if this trade is going to be a value and you're going to get something from it.
The way I see it is you're either going to get a really nice return or you're just not going to get much at all. But the way things were going with Schmaltz, it didn't look like you were getting much this year either. So I don't think they can really lose much here, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I just, your big fear is he's going to continue this play, and you don't know if you're going to get the 2017-2018 Nick Schmaltz or if you're going to get the 2018-2019 Nick Schmaltz.
And it's not like they're trading first rounder for some old washed up dude. You're basically trading for another guy with potential.
You're trading it for two guys with potential.
Yeah, and two guys.
And one's 21 and one's 22. So they're both very young.
Right.
And there's room to work with there. If with Nick Schmaltz is at the end of the season, you have to decide what you want to do with him. And if you let him walk, then you get nothing. You just is a waste. And if you decide to pay him, you got your fingers crossed, you're rolling the dice there. At least this way, you've got, two other players that you're going to see how they do. And one's under contract all of next season, and the other one's restricted after the season. But at least you get to see what you've got there.
Exactly.
I'm okay with this. I don't know. I'm not going to even go out on a limb because this is one of those trades that it's going to be 2 years before you can say who won or lost this or if it was a good trade for. So I'm not even going to go out on a limb. I'm just saying I'm okay with the move. I'm not angry.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it.
Because either one of these teams has the potential for this trade to blow up in their face. It also has the potential for both of these teams to win. And there's also actually a big potential where both of these teams, it was just a wash because neither one of them won.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, it's not like when you at the trade deadline, you trade for a veteran for a playoff run. You're just giving up stuff for that. This isn't that. This is trading away young guys that you think need to change the scenery for more young guys that need to change the scenery. And it's a long play, not a short one where, if you make that move for a veteran at the trade deadline, it's either Stanley Cup or bust. And this is actually, you're looking at this as bolstering your core for the long run.
Yeah, let's hope it works out nicely because right now there's a lot of uncertainty for the future.
Yeah, big time. This week, you had, it wasn't a great week. You got a win in there, but it was an ugly win. And consistently, you're starting really slow. Against the Capitals, you gave up a goal in the first 54 seconds. It was 2-0 in the first. It was 3-0 after the second. You gave up a goal in 29 seconds to the Lightning, and you gave up 4 goals in the first, and you were down 2-0 at one point to the lowly Panthers. You can't. This team is not good enough to start out in a hole.
Right. It was. You'll take the win, though, but it was another really ugly one.
And you have the shots on goal in the first period. The Capitals was fairly close, 14-12. But against the Panthers, you were outshot 16-9. And against the Lightning, you 19-11. So you're giving up a whole lot of shots on goal, and they're finding the back of the net.
I'm glad I didn't see any of that Lightning game. I just got the updates and turned my phone off, basically.
I had it recorded, and yesterday I fast-forwarded, through part of the game just to, because I had just had highlights and things and was reading, but I just wanted to see some, and it was not a good game. You're in that weird position where you're not a good team. And you went from a system that you've had for how many years was Quenneville there?
Like a decade, basically.
Yeah, you had a system for a decade, and now you're switching to a different system, and there's growing pains, and you're already a struggling team. But I mean, the situation is this new system, the Blackhawks forwards are required to be a lot more accountable on defense than they have been, and they're not playing as such so far. It requires the defensemen to communicate really well, and that hasn't been happening. And you made the big mistake of pairing Seabrook and Keith again at one point, and that was a bad mistake.
Well, why did he scratch Joki Haru? Why did Carlton scratch Joki Haru? That was against Tampa Bay, wasn't it?
I believe so. Scratched one game. I don't know. I think he's doing one of those Quenneville type, let's just make crazy lineups and see where we go from there.
But you know, the guys that are your defensive depth are terrible. I don't get that.
I couldn't tell you. But I mean, he's a guy that has to be a success for you to compete.
Yeah. You know, what was weird? During Thanksgiving week, I always still instinctively expect the road trip that they don't do anymore, the circus trip. So I'm always like, okay, Black Wednesday, when I go with my friends, we watch Hawks versus Sharks, late game. Then the day after Thanksgiving, I sit around 2:00. Oh, time for them to play the Ducks. And then Saturday night, time to play the Kings. It's still weird not having that. It was the same schedule every year.
I'm anti the circus. So on the one hand, I'm glad the circus is no more. But on the other hand, you're right. I missed the watching the Blackhawks play those, you know, that the bunch of games at weird times against West Coast opponents right in a row to get them out of the way. And I also missed.
And they always played well in those trips.
They did. And they had like the Father's Weekend there where they.
Yep.
So it was always cool. And then at the same time was the Bulls play at the same place. So they would have their circus trip. And I just always remember Joakim Noah bitching about it. It's like the news. They have several go-to things. So like the first time we get a sub-zero weather, they always find the construction worker who's fixing a broken water main and he's got snots frozen in his mustache. That's their go-to. And the go-to in sports was on the road trip, on the circus trip, going to Joakim Noah bitching.
Good times.
And now the circus trip is no more and Joakim Noah doesn't play anymore. So.
Yep.
I think there was news today that Connor Murphy is now a full participant at practice.
I know he was skating in practice, so that's hopefully a good sign.
So I don't know how that's going to change things, how that's going to fit into what Culleton's trying to do.
Any reinforcement, I think, is good right now.
Yeah, because you've got some bad play as far as the defensemen. So,
yeah. That's what happens when you're old.
True. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about Blackhawks?
No, not really. I think we'll just see how these new guys come into the system, kind of see how the dog days of the season midway roll on. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you're at. And where did I... where did I write that note? Was it Stromy was like best friends with DeBrinket from their minor league hockey days?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's best friends with DeBrinket from their OHL days. So that'll be fun to see them play together. I saw a picture from a practice where DeBrinket's looking at him and just smiling.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be a nice reunion. I even tweeted at the Chicago Blackhawks. It's like, here's a live look at DeBrinket and Stromy together again. And it was like a gif of some of the characters from The Office having a dance party.
I love that scene. So yeah, it's going to be exciting to see new blood in there, and hopefully, it adds some sort of new life to the Blackhawks, because there's definitely some growing pains here on an already rough season.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. You guys are the reason that we do the show. Please hit us up on social media at ChiFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com. And hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's the iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, the TuneIn app. And your homework this week is to share this podcast with at least one friend. So thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.